The ambulance convoy caught up with the tail of the main British retreat on the outskirts of the village. Here, the military police had set up a temporary roadblock. They were sending all able-bodied troops off the road to regroup and to set up a secondary line of defence, and they were searching all vehicles for deserters from the battlefield. "Is the new line holding, Sergeant?" Bobby Clark asked the policeman who checked the papers. "Can we halt in the village? Some of my patients..." He was interrupted by a shell burst that hit one of the cottages beside the road. They were still within extreme range of the German guns. "There is no telling, sir." The sergeant handed Bobby back his papers. "If I were you, I would pull back as far as the main base hospital at Arras. It's going to be a bit hairy around here." So the long, slow retreat began. They were a part of the solid stream of traffic that blocked the road for as far ahead as they could see, and reduced to the same excruciating pace. The ambulances would start with a jolt, roll forwards a few yards with noses to tails, and then pull up again for another interminable wait. As the day wore on, so the heat built up, and the road so recently running with winter mud turned to talcum dust. The flies came from the surrounding farmyards to the bloody bandages and crawled on the faces of the wounded men in the tiers of stretchers, and they moaned and cried out for water. Anna and Santen went to ask for water at one of the farmhouses alongside the road and found it already deserted. They helped themselves to milk pails and filled them from the pump. They moved down the convoy, giving out mugs of water, bathing the faces of those in fever from their wounds, helping the ambulance orderlies clean those who had not been able to contain their bodily functions, and all the time trying to appear cheerful and confident, giving what comfort they could, despite their own grief and bereavement. By nightfall, the convoy had covered less than 5 miles, and they could still hear the din of the battle raging behind them. Once more, the convoy was stalled, waiting to move on. "It looks like we have managed to hold them at Mortomne." Bobby Clark paused beside Santen. "It should be able to stop for the night." He looked more closely at the face of the soldier who Santen was tending. "God knows these poor devils cannot take much more of this. They need food and rest. There is a farmyard with a large barn around the next bend. It hasn't been taken over by anyone else yet. We'll bag it." Anna produced a bunch of onions from her sack and used them to flavour the stew of canned bully beef that they boiled up over an open fire. They served the stew with dry army biscuit and mugs of black tea, all of it begged from the commissary trucks parked in the stalled column of traffic. Santen fed the men who were too weak to help themselves, and then worked with the orderlies, changing the dressings. The heat and dust had done their worst, and many of the wounds were inflamed and swollen and beginning to ooze yellow pus. After midnight, Santen slipped out of the barn and went to the water pump in the yard. She felt soiled and sweaty, and longed to bathe her entire body and change into clean, freshly ironed clothes. There was no privacy for that, and the few clothes she had packed in the carpet bag she knew she must hoard. Instead, she slipped off her petticoat and knickers from under her skirt and washed them out under the tap, then wrung them and hung them over the gate while she bathed her face and arms with cold water. She let the night breeze dry her skin and slipped her underclothes on again, still damp. Then she combed out her hair, and she felt a little better, although her eyes still felt raw and swollen from the smoke, and there was the heavy weight of her grief like a stone in her chest, and an enormous physical fatigue dragged at her legs and arms. The images of her father in the smoke and the white stallion lying on the green grass assailed her once again, but she shut her mind to them. "Enough," she said aloud as she leaned against the gate to the yard. "Enough for today. I'll cry again tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes. A voice replied in broken French from the darkness, and she was startled. Bobby? She saw the glow of his cigarette then, and he came out of the shadows and leaned over the gate beside her. You are an amazing girl, he went on in English. I have six sisters, but I've never known a girl like you. Matter of fact, I've known damned few chaps that could match you either. She was silent, but when he drew on his cigarette, she studied his face in the glow. He was about Michael's age, and handsome. His mouth was full and sensitive-looking, and there was a gentleness about him that she never had an opportunity to notice before. I say, he was suddenly embarrassed by her silence, you don't mind me talking to you, do you? I'll leave you alone if you prefer. She shook her head. I don't mind. And for a while they were silent, Bobby puffing on his cigarette, and both of them listening to the distant sound of the battle and to the occasional soft groan from one of the wounded in the barn. Then Santan stirred and asked, Do you remember the young airman the first day you came up to the chateau? Yes, the one with the burned arm. What was his name again? Andrew? No, that was his friend. The wild Scot. Yes, of course. His name was Michel. I remember both of them. What became of them? Michel and I were to be married. But he is dead. And her pent-up emotions came pouring out. He was a stranger, and gentle, and she found it so easy to talk to him in the darkness. She told him in her quaint English about Michel and how they had planned to live in Africa. Then she told him about her father and how he had changed since her mother had died, and how she had tried to look after him and stop him drinking so much. Then she described what had taken place that morning in the burning chateau. I think that was what he wanted. In his own way, he was tired of living. I think he wanted to die and be with Mama again. But now both he and Michael are gone. I have nothing. When at last she finished, she felt drained and tired, but quietly resigned. You have really been through the grinder. Bobby reached out and squeezed her arm. I wish I could help you. You have helped me. Thank you. I could give you something, a little laudanum. It would help you sleep. Santan felt a surge in her blood, a longing for the quick oblivion he offered her. It was so strong that it frightened her. No, she refused with unnecessary emphasis. I will be all right. She shivered. I'm cold and it's late now. Thank you again for listening to me. Anna had hung a blanket as a screen at one end of the barn and made a mattress of straw for them. Santan dropped almost immediately into a death-like sleep and woke in the dawn in a sickly sweat with the urgent nausea on her again. Still groggy with sleep, she stumbled out and managed to get behind the stone wall of the yard before heaving up a little yellow bile. When she straightened up and wiped her mouth, clinging to the wall for support, she found that Bobby Clark was beside her, his expression troubled as he took her wrist and checked her pulse rate. "I think I'd better have a look at you," he said. No, she felt vulnerable. This new sickness worried her, for she had always been so healthy and strong. She was afraid he might discover some dreadful disease. I'm all right, truly. But he led her firmly by the hand to the parked ambulance and drew down the canvas side screens to give them privacy. Lie here, please. He ignored her protests and unfastened her blouse to sound her chest. His manner was so clinical and professional that she no longer argued and submitted meekly to his examination, sitting up and coughing and breathing at his instruction. "Now I will examine you," he said. "Do you wish your maid to be present as a chaperone?" She shook her head mutely, and he said, "Please remove your skirt and petticoat." When he had finished, he made a show of packing his instruments back in the roll and tying up the retaining ribbons, while she arranged her clothing. Then he looked up at her with such a peculiar expression that she was alarmed. "Is it something serious?" He shook his head. Santin, your fiancé is dead. You told me that last night. She nodded. It is very early to be certain, very early, but I believe that you will need a father for the child that you are carrying. Her hands flew to her stomach, an involuntary, protective gesture. I have rarely known you only a few days, but that is long enough for me to realize that I've fallen in love with you. I would be honored. His voice trailed off, for she was not listening to him.
Michel, she whispered. Michel's baby. I have not lost everything. I still have a part of him.